So we finished off with text number 27. Yeah. So we're up to 28 today.
Yep.
Canto 7, chapter 9, text number 28. We did 28, yeah?
28.
Yeah, we did it.
Yeah.
So we're up to 29.
Right.
29. My Lord, our unlimited reservoir of transcendental qualities, you have killed my father, Hiranyakasipu, and saved me from his sword. He had said very angrily, if there is any supreme controller other than me, let him save you. I shall now sever your head from your body. Therefore, I think that both in saving me and in killing him, you have acted just to prove true the words of your devotee. There is no other cause. So here Srila Prabhupada quotes his verse, Samaham Savabhuteshu, Bhagavad Gita 9:29. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is undoubtedly equal to everyone. He has no friend and no enemy. But as one desires benefits from the Lord is very pleased to award them. So Srila Prabhupada goes on to describe that, you know, the lower and higher positions of living entities are due to their desires, for the Lord, being equal to all, fulfills everyone's desires. I'm pretty sure we did this verse as well. 29. Oh, we did 29. What?
Pretty sure.
Yeah. So, wasn't this one the one where Gopi Bindesh, you mentioned that this is sort of answers the question from the first chapter? Or another verse did also, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so going back. So this is, that's what I thought. I thought I'd quoted that.
27 was the verse.
Yeah. Oh, 27. That's right, the actual translation of it. Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, that's why it seemed very familiar. Yeah, that's right. So this is repeating. This is, in other words, Prahlad has stated that the Lord is equal to everyone, and now he's giving proof. Right. Yeah, that's it. Thank you. Never doubt. Bali. Bhadava Gaura. What's that?
The students are paying attention.
Yes, the students are paying attention. It's the teacher we've got to keep an eye on. So this is, he's giving proof. By his own personal example. This is a very common thing. You know, we get this from Prabhupada, that when devotees say something, they'll quite often give a little example. You know, but not a lot of people do that. I know when I talk to some of my daughters, you know, my older daughters, like, you know, 20s, 30s, and I say something, and I say, I'll just give you a little example. They're like, no! Stop with the examples! And I say to them, if you're going to talk to me, I've got to give an example. So they just get used to it, but, you know, it does take a bit of getting used to it, but devotees love their examples. We get it from Srila Prabhupada. And he gets it from Prahlad Maharaj. So here, but this is very good, that The killing of Hiranyakashipu and saving of Prahlad Maharaj also strictly followed this law of the supreme controller's activities. And I know why this is so familiar as well, because just a couple of days ago I was reading this section with Sri Murthy, and that's why I'm thinking, I've read this just recently again. So I discussed this. We looked at this verse for about an hour. We had a big chat about this. So when Prahlad's mother, Hiranyakashipu's wife, Kayadu, was under the protection of Narada, she prayed for the protection of her son from the enemy, and Narada Muni gave assurance that Prahlad Maharaj would always be saved from the enemy's hands. See, so Narada's given this assurance. Thus, when Hiranyakashipu was going to kill Prahlad Maharaj, the Lord saved Prahlad to fulfill his promise in Bhagavad Gita, Kuntaya Pratijani Hi Name Bhakta Pranashati. And to prove true the words of Narada. Now, Kuntaya Pratijani Hi Name Bhakta Pranashati. That's saying, Arjun, you declare it boldly. My devotee never perishes. So it's a very interesting statement by Prabhupada, because this is happening millions of years or something before Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. But it's showing how, Srila Prabhupada is accepting those teachings as eternal. So to fulfill his promise in Bhagavad Gita, Kuntaya, specifically Arjuna, the son of Kunti, you declare it boldly. And also, Narada has also declared it, that nothing will happen to, Prahlad. And Arjuna said, Krishna said, Arjuna, you say nothing will happen to my devotee. So, the Lord can fulfill many purposes through one action. Thus, the killing of Hiranyakashipu and the saving of Prahlad were enacted simultaneously to prove the truthfulness of the Lord's devotee and the fidelity of the Lord himself to his own purpose. The Lord acts only to satisfy the desires of his devotees. Otherwise, he has nothing to do. As confirmed in the Vedic language, natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. It's very similar. Well, that sounds a bit from the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord has nothing to do personally, for everything is done through his different potencies. Parashya Shakti Vivadeva Shriyate. There is a similar statement in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord has multifarious energies through which everything is done. Thus, when he personally does something, it is only to satisfy his devotee. The Lord is known as Bhaktavatsala because he very much favours his devoted servant. So, the previous verse was, we heard that in the purport, Prabhupada described the secret of success. Achieving the mercy of the Vaishnava, the Vaishnava guru. The senior Vaishnava is guru. All Vaishnavas to some degree or another are actually guru, but especially ones, senior Vaishnavas become our guru in a general sense, or sometimes officially Shiksha or Diksha Guru. And that is the secret of success, is we get their mercy, then Krishna will give us his mercy. And therefore, here, Prahlad Maharaj is understanding that because Narada Muni gave an assurance, therefore the Lord will act, to prove the truthfulness of his devotees' words. Therefore, I will be protected. And I mentioned this in Srimad Bhagavatam class the other day. Srila Prabhupada Because Dhruva Maharaj, right? Dhruva Maharaj, he was advised by Narada Muni again, you know, go to the forest, you will, you know, find the shelter of the personality of Godhead. And it's very interesting, you know, to tell a little five-year-old boy to go to the forest, you know. But, the principle was just so firmly fixed up that Narada was, you know, is certain of the Lord will, you know, himself, that he will prove the truthfulness and the fidelity of the Lord's own purpose. And he also fulfills, even more so, he likes to satisfy the fidelity and the truthfulness and, you know, the assurances of his devotees. He was very confident that this little boy goes to the forest and follows the ancient principles of Bhakti Yoga, the eternal principles of Bhakti Yoga. As we see, Bhagavad Gita is an eternal science, as Krishna says himself, this eternal science of the relationship between the soul and the Supreme Soul in Bhakti Yoga. If one follows that, then the Lord will protect them. So we see this theme there in the Srimad Bhagavatam with Dhruva Maharaj and here with Prahlad Maharaj. The secret of success, especially if we take shelter of the devotees, then the Lord, you know, we can be very assured that the Lord will act to give us protection and the ability to... the senior Vaishnava gives us some instruction to follow, then we can understand that the Lord will give us that ability if we, you know, try and apply ourselves to fulfill that service of the servant of the servant of the servant. That's how the Lord likes to act. The safe position is that position as the servant of the servant of the servant. And we discussed last week how, you know, even in Vaishnava circles, it's still quite a rare position, because, you know, our nature is that we all want to be not in the subordinate role to anyone in this world. You know, I'm not your servant, you know. I'm no one's servant. I'm independent. If anything, you'll do what I say. You know. So, that mood, we all have that mood. And to take up that position of service is very, very difficult. And it's something that can get a lot of lip service. You know, people, yes, I am the servant, the servant, the servant. But when it comes down to actually, you know, taking that mood within the heart and practicing it within the Vaishnava community, it's actually quite rare. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, the core, used to say, please refrain from imitating the actions of a devotee and try to think like a devotee. See? So that's the thing. Everyone can act like a devotee. I am the servant of the servant of the servant. Is very well done. Very well done. Just a little bit more with the hands and you've got it down here. And head a little bit lower, that's it. I am the servant of the servant. Very, yeah, like that. But in the heart, it's just not there, you know. He would see that was a common feature. Stop doing that. You know, please refrain. That is not what we're wanting, you know. Try and think like a devotee. That's the real thing. What is it? What does a devotee think like? He thinks in this way, servant, servant, servant. You give someone instruction, you know, who's obvious, you know, I mean, most of us know certain people have come along to the movement and they're a little bit junior to us. I think most of us know that for different reasons or another. Not that, you know, A devotee always feels a servant, a servant, a servant. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that in thinking like that, a devotee ignores. A devotee causes havoc in ISKCON by not ensuring the protocols are followed. So, one thing I found, in ISKCON, because in the early days, of course, when you first begin, everyone's, you're the servant of everyone. It's obvious. You've just come along and, in our day, of course, it's a very good distinction because, a lot of the devotees were Prabhupada disciples. Then you had your peers, and it's devotees around for 6 months, for a year, longer year. We in those days, we generally, took them as always in a superior position. We never overrid that. Because to be in ISKCON for 6 months in those days is like your 5 years now. it was really hard. So, you've done 6 months sleeping on the floors, doing it real hard. So he respected them. Now it's if you'd been around for a couple of years, and say you got yourself in a situation where none of your peers are around, and none of your senior devotees are around, and you've got some new devotees with you, you can't just sort of ignore the protocol. You've got to teach them. You've got to help them to follow the system. Not that you say, oh, I'm the servant of the servant of the servant, so whatever you want to do, you guys, you do it. Oh, okay. Let's play some rock and roll, We've been doing chanting Hare Krishna. Oh, okay, I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. Let's do that. Can we do it in the temple room? They've got the great sound system in there. Yes, I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. Yes. No. So it's interesting. You've got it as a servant of the servant of the servant, but you still... What does that mean? This is a really interesting point. Servant of the servant of the servant means that you serve someone who actually is a servant, and they're serving someone who's actually a servant. So we sort of touched on that. We're not asked to be the servant of a nonsense who's a servant of the servant. See? So someone comes along and they want to do some nonsense. We're not asked to be the servant of a nonsense. So, we're the servant of the servant. So the persons we're serving may be absent, but we actually have to fulfill what they would like done. And therefore, we're still the servant of the servant because they may not be physically present, but we're still serving them, that what they would like done is going to happen, with these new devotees like that. That now I have to sort of almost be the Prabhu. But I'm not the Prabhu. I'm just implementing as the servant of the servant of the servant. So... there can be an artificial, in this section, I can't remember the exact purport, but Prabhupada does mention, quite distinctly that one should make a distinction between, who's properly situated as a devotee or a servant and who's not. That has to be there. So servant of the servant of the servant, one, it shouldn't be artificial. Yes, I'm your servant, but don't ask me to do anything because I won't. And nor is it that I'm the servant of the servant. Anyone can do whatever they like because I'm your servant. That's not that. It means that Srila Prabhupada is a servant of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. They're bona fide servants, and they're bona fide servants we're serving. And if they're not present, we're still serving them. Always maintain the position of servant. Not, and no nonsense is going to, you know, somehow get in there that we become the servant of a nonsense. Because I've never read anywhere in Prabhupada's books where you become the servant of the nonsense servant of the servant. Oh, no, that's not there. So, yeah, a little discrimination is required. But, you know, Prabhupada's example is, you know, very interesting. We were talking that Prabhupada was always in the mood of the servant and the servant and the servant. His spiritual master asked him directly to preach Krishna consciousness in the West, and especially, you know, through book distribution. If you ever get money, print books. You know, the English-speaking world. When his spiritual master left, he wanted to do that, and he wanted to do it as a servant of his spiritual master's, you know, senior servants. But there was some nonsense that, you know, they were delaying, you know, whatever, you know, holding back, sometimes showing obstacles. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, you know, in the absence of working through the via media of a servant of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, one of his senior disciples, literally had to, you know, maintain that mood, but just literally execute the order without the via media. But it doesn't mean he lost that mood. It's just that, you know, there's another example with Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one time he was preaching in Jagannath Puri, I think, and, you know, there was a very senior Babaji, I think he was, who, you know, wouldn't listen to his lectures or kirtan and was somewhat critical of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And then that person became very ill, from memory. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I think, was actually helping him to get better. But he was asking, you know, he'd heard, why you have this critical mentality towards me. He said, you sit there like a Vaishnava, you know, you do not wear the Kunti Mala, like that. And he explained, but I would, but I, you know, I haven't found, you know, a suitable Prabhu, you know, that will, that I can accept the Kunti Mala from. Therefore, you know, in one sense he was feeling somewhat unfit, but at the same time, you know, so he wanted to be the servant of the servant, but the proper person to serve, you know, he was finding difficult to find, you know, because if we look at the era Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so many sahajas, you know, it really, Vaishnavism had really descended to being covered over by a lot of cheap imitations. So a devotee always remains the servant of the servant of the servant, even when sometimes it's you know, the personalities that we're wanting to serve may not be physically present. Any comments or questions on that? Now, in the previous verse, you know, that mood is summed up with Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's, you know, Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasada. Now, in that, you know, it very clearly says that, you know, without the mercy of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says, you just can't make advancement. You know, you can be doing all the externals, but you're not going to make advancement. And but if you get the mercy of the spiritual master, you make lots of advancement very easily. So it's the same principle. You know, and this is where, you know, these songs of the Vaishnavas, acharyas, you know, they've taken the essence of this So we've got eight stanzas, you know, which we sing for Mangalarti. What is the auspicious thing? What is the first thing we should think of in the morning? We should think of the essence of the teaching of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And what is that? Yasya Prasada Bhagavad Prasada. And that's how it concludes. Here are all the glorious activities of the spiritual master. So, what is the conclusion? You serve that personality. He's a direct manifestation of the Lord's mercy. Without that, you'll not make any advancement. And this is the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. So, you know, it's a secret of success, and we sing it every morning. You know, sometimes Prabhupada, you know, he would mention like that, you know, that he would be speaking some point and then point out how it's not being enacted, and then point out, but you're singing it every morning. You know. So every morning we sing, we actually sing this exact secret of success, and yet it's still very rarely enacted. It can be artificially done, it can be foolishly done, or what have you. But the proper, you know. Now, when it says one can make advancement in Krishna consciousness, what does that mean? And this is what we're going to study, because so it's good to, you know, this is where we've come to. Now, if we look at these verses with Prahlad Maharaj that come up, we'll see how he's seeing Krishna everywhere, you know, and just, you know, the realization. That's Krishna consciousness. That a devotee who has actually gained the mercy of the spiritual master, Krishna will act and in a very potent way to help that devotee make spiritual advancement. What is that advancement? One becomes GBC, one becomes sannyas. Well, that wouldn't be fair for the women, would it? One gets which position, you know? Higher or lower? You know, all one's wealth is taken off one, you know. One gets severely chastised, you know. What is advancement means that devotee can actually feel the presence of Krishna at every moment in every facet of life. That's Krishna. And this is what we saw with Prahlad. You know, it said, look at this verse. If there is any supreme control other than me, let him save you. I shall now sever your head from your body. Prahlad's confident. Yes, I see Krishna. Oh, you know, where? Is he in this pillar? No? You see? So that level of Krishna consciousness. So this is... and Prahlad has gained that. How? Because he's telling us, how did I get to this point? Because the Lord is proving true the words of Narada Muni. Now, here, you know, one, that... you know, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita also that, you know, he, you know, descends to, you know, protect his devotees and to annihilate the, you know, the demons and, you know, establish religious principles and like that. So what's that verse from Bhagavad Gita? This is another one Krishna's assuring to. What's that? Paratranaya Sadhanam. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principle of his religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. You know, these are the statements that Krishna makes. And the Lord descends to prove his own fidelity and truthfulness and also that of his devotees who are quoting that on behalf of the Lord. And also, we will see how, you know, Prahlad Maharaj is saying there is no other cause. This principle of how the Lord acts, he's the cause of destruction, of irreligious principles. He is the only cause of destruction of religious principles. He is the only cause of protection of his devotees. You know, there is no other cause of that. And then what's also very significant is Prabhupada's, you know, explaining here that generally the Lord, he can do everything by his potencies, but for the purpose of protecting his devotees, he comes personally, which is, you know, the same thing mentioned in that verse, right? I think in that verse of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, as far as the atheistic are concerned, it is not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear as he is to destroy them, as he did with the demons Ravana and Kamsa. The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish demons, but the Lord especially descends to appease his unalloyed devotees who are always harassed by the demoniac. And then he says, the demon harasses a devotee even though the latter may happen to be his kin. Although Prahlad Maharaj was the son of Hiranyakashipu, he was nonetheless persecuted by his father. So the Lord appears in different avatars. He descends from the spiritual world personally, although he could do it by his... But when he does so, it's especially because of this principle that he does like to satisfy his devotees and protect them and give them assurances and also, you know, protect the fidelity of their words. So let's move on to text 30. So this is the basis of this philosophical section which comes up now. What is Krishna consciousness? My dear Lord, you alone manifest yourself as the entire cosmic manifestation. For you existed before the creation, you exist after the annihilation, and you are the maintainer between the beginning and the end. All this is done by your external energy through actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature. Therefore, whatever exists externally and internally is you alone. Prabhupada quoting Brahma Samhita 535, worshipping Lord Brahma, worshipping Govinda, who by one of his plenary portions enters the existence of every universe and every atomic particle, and thus unlimitedly manifests his infinite energy all over the material creation. Therefore, the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in maintaining his devotees are transcendental, not material. He exists in everything as the cause and effect, yet he is separate, existing beyond this cosmic manifestation. So that's, you know, a very interesting statement, isn't it? So... when... the devotees are being maintained in this material world, Prahlad's saying the Lord is directly doing that, even though he may be using his material energy. And because the Lord is doing it, the maintaining of the devotees is transcendental. You know, it's like one time, someone asked Prabhupada, you know, a lot of people in the early days were always critical of the movement because, you know, they felt that we were very money hungry. I don't know where they got that idea from. You know, devotees, money hungry, no. But we were, actually. but because we wanted it for Krishna. You know, Prabhupada wanted lots of money to print books, establish temples, you know. As he said, you know, the impersonalists, when someone offers money, they put their hands like that, and he says, the devotees like this. So, you know, he was asking the question, you know, where do you get your money? So Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna. You know, like this, what Prahlad is saying, you know. Oh, Krishna. Krishna is giving. He said, but, you know, I'm not sure whether he may have seen someone sign a check or something. He said, but someone is, you know, giving some money, signing a check or something. Is that Krishna? Prabhupada said, yes, Krishna was inspiring him to write that check. So although, you know, it's a material person using material pen, you know, literally, it's almost like an event in the material world. But we, Prahlad is saying, there's nothing material about that. See, that's Krishna consciousness. I see Krishna. I see the personality of Godhead who's completely transcendental, doing something transcendental and maintaining his devotee. That's Krishna consciousness. That's interesting. Isn't it? Yeah. Is that Prabhupada? So someone's coming and, you know, and signing a check. And Prabhupada's saying, Krishna is here. He's in his heart. He's inspiring him to give like that. So in this way, he's explaining Krishna consciousness. How did he become? And Krishna consciousness is synonymous with the Lord being directly present. And that's why, but if Krishna withdraws himself because a devotee is not following, you know, a devotee, you know, Krishna is trying to glorify his Vaishnavas and someone is trying to deride them and present themselves as a big devotee. Because, you know, materially, when one wants to, when one deals with someone in a superior position, one tries to drag them down in order to elevate oneself, you know. When one deals with one's peers, one tries to boast and show off in order to be better than them. And when one deals with inferiors, one tries to exploit them and, you know, deride them. It's a way of, the way of advancing is to sort of drag others down. And one remains degraded, but artificially one appears to have put themselves in a superior position. Now, one, you know, when we come to Krishna consciousness, naturally we're going to try those things out. because we sort of come off the street in one sense. We might be well-dressed and what have you, but we've been doing this sort of thing for millions of years, so we're going to try it out, especially if one comes from a corporate background. But, it's a bit dangerous, though, because Krishna's trying to glorify his devotees. That's a nice relationship Krishna has. He'll personally appear, you know. He doesn't even do it with his energy. He'll personally come as an avatar. And we come to Krishna consciousness, we think, oh, you know, this person is in a higher position. I'm not getting enough attention, a facility, you know, prestige, whatever. this devotee's, you know, so full of fault and I don't think they've really done anything wonderful. And, you know, I should advertise myself, and every time someone speaks about that person, I'm just going to try and, you know, to write it. So Krishna really doesn't like that, you know. One cannot make advancement. What is the result? That one cannot be, Krishna consciousness is not utilizing one's intelligence. It means that Krishna has appeared in one's consciousness. Krishna is directly there. Krishna is perceivable. You know, that is called Krishna consciousness. Krishna is there. Prahlad is describing this Krishna consciousness, the full presence of Nrisimha, not just externally that is in the room, but Krishna consciousness. Now, we know that one can actually be in the presence of God and just see stone. Srila Prabhupada described that, you know, when the hearing and chanting process doesn't go on properly, which means either one's hearing and chanting or one is doing it offensively or insincerely, then the worship of the deity, one may see that worship, the obligation and the regulation and the amount of work one has to do for the deity, that it becomes a great stone burden around one's neck, and one, perceives the deity like a heavy stone burden, more so than the personality of Godhead. So one can actually be in the presence of the deity, in the presence of the holy name, in presence of the personality of Godhead, and yet, not behave in such a way as if God is present, and not be able to perceive the presence of God. But the manifestation of the presence of the person, just like Kamsa, Krishna was present. Kamsa was thinking of Krishna all the time. But Kamsa's thinking of Krishna is considered unfavourable and rejected. We don't accept that. Because he was thinking of Krishna and his devotees in an unfavourable way, and it's not really Krishna consciousness. It's completely out. Krishna consciousness is by nature favourable, and pleasing to Krishna. So when it's done in a very unfavourable, unpleasing way, he's thinking of Krishna, and yet he's only seeing things from a material perspective. He's not able to perceive the glories of the personality of Godhead. We don't want to have little tinges of Kamsa within us. Now, Kamsa was, Bhaktivinoda Thakura describes Kamsa as a personification of like atheism or something, like Krishna represented the absolute truth, and Kamsa personifies like that atheistic mentality of those who against the try to destroy God consciousness or spiritual consciousness like that. So they're thinking of God but with a destructive, unfavorable attitude. That's not acceptable. So any comments or questions about that? Yep.
The at the end of the purport is an interesting point that Prabhupada makes, that what the difference between the material and the spiritual world is.
Mm-hmm. It's such a wonderful quote, isn't it?
Very interesting.
Yeah.
The difference between the material and spiritual worlds is that his external energy is manifested in the material world, whereas his spiritual energy exists in the spiritual world. Both energies, however, belong to the Supreme Lord, and therefore, in a higher sense, there is no exhibition of material energy, because everything is spiritual energy. The energy in which the Lord's all-pervasiveness is not realized is called material. Otherwise, everything is spiritual. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says, you are everything.
Yeah. Now, this is why, we had a meeting last year about, the standards of, examinations in Bhaktivedanta. And there was a little kerfuffle. Because I was saying that I followed, as Atul Krishna said to me, here is the, this is what you work from, these are the questions, and they get 10 questions each. So I just followed what Atul Krishna gave me. When I went to the meeting, they said I'd actually not done the proper thing, because another, good teacher would, but he was giving quite, they had to, like write an essay, sort of like that, and not necessarily they, if they didn't touch what was in Prabhupada's purpose, it didn't seem to matter. And I brought this up, although it was sort of rejected, but later Anirudha Prabhu said it should be included. And my point is that I'm actually against the principle that you can ask a devotee in ISKCON to answer a question after reading one of Prabhupada's specific purports, and then you ask them a question, they've just read it, and they don't even refer to Prabhupada giving a very succinct answer to that question. Now, your first point of call is if someone asks you a question and you've just read that in one of Prabhupada's purports as part of what you're reading to answer those questions, and you don't refer to it at all, there's something wrong with that. The devotee, what we read before, right? It says here, where was that? Try and find it. I can't remember exactly which purport it's in, but where maybe earlier on, but Prabhupada was saying that one should accept the thoughts of the devotees and their instructions and their assurances. That's how we think. So someone asks us a question, and then we like to accept, what are the thoughts of Prabhupada on that question? What is his instructions? Otherwise, why read the books? He's written all these books. But he asked me a question. All right, to answer this question, put the book aside. Okay, ask me, what is the use of reading the books? Our whole movement is based on Prabhupada's books. Therefore, you'd think that the first thing is someone asks you a question and a devotee would be thinking, okay, first point of call, Prabhupada's books, and because we're doing this section, I should look in the section we're doing the examinations on. See? So these, I'm trying to impress upon devotees, generally, wherever they may be in ISKCON, but especially in the examination, that it is an essential skill and is an essential part of preserving the teachings of Prabhupada, that devotees, they're just really able to present Prabhupada's teachings. And this statement, it is such a wonderful statement and it is just such a perfect answer. Why not use it? Why go somewhere else? Especially because we're hearing that if we accept the thoughts of the senior Vaishnava, especially someone like Srila Prabhupada, Krishna acts through that. And Krishna likes that. If we try to use our own prowess, Prabhupada was, one time I was in the courtyard, here some years back, and I heard some devotees speaking. They're probably embarrassed about it now. But a devotee was saying to another devotee, everyone wants Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Prabhupada. Prabhupada's gone, Why not, we stick to the current, devotees. And I was shocked. I'll never get that out of my system. I'm sure Krishna would like, Prabhupada to be forgotten as quick as possible, right? Yeah, hands up, no? No, not going to happen. It's very dangerous for our movement. And then once we get a little away from Prabhupada and devotees, feel that, a new approach, and what Prabhupada is giving in his books. Now, I'm not saying by that that we shouldn't do things like, you know, where there's, outreach programs where you're sort of doing things indirectly. In our day, we had to sell, you know, paintings and all sorts of things just to get money and wigs and everything. But, you know, we had to do it. Sometimes, you know, devotees, you know, do preaching through, you know, yoga, and they do, you know, different things. I'm not saying that's good, you know. Whatever you can do to help people become Krishna conscious, that's good. But in a situation where a devotee is able to preach directly, that someone has, they've gone through the different indirect ways and they've asked a question where they really want a straight answer, and they're quite happy to get from Prabhupada, why not give it to them? If a devotee can't do that, there's something wrong. Or if a devotee is averse to that, there's something wrong. You know, if they're proud, you know, well, you know, you should, don't worry about Prabhupada, you know, you should see the way I preach and the examples I have and so many things. None of us even mention in Prabhupada's books, you know. People love it. So, but Krishna doesn't act like that. Prabhupada's books make devotees. Krishna acts like that. You accept Prabhupada's thoughts and instructions, and someone says, oh, they've listened to what my dear devotee Prabhupada said. Krishna will bless that person to be a devotee. To glorify Prabhupada. Someone reads Prabhupada's books. To glorify Prabhupada, that Krishna will help that person. Like that. So that's the principle. It is such a, so I'm going to, you know, what Prabhupada said. He says, he goes, therefore, without Krishna, the Parabrahman, nothing can exist. The difference between the material and spiritual worlds is that his external energy is manifested in the material world, whereas his spiritual energy acts in the spiritual world, exists in the spiritual world. Both energies, however, belong to the Supreme Lord. And therefore, in a higher sense, there is no exhibition of material energy, because everything is spiritual energy. The energy in which the Lord's all-pervasiveness is not realized is called material, otherwise everything is spiritual. Therefore, Prahlad says, you are everything. So, Prabhupada also said that Krishna is everything, but everything is not Krishna. And we discuss, you know, that. So Prahlad Maharaj is saying, Krishna, you are everything. So Krishna is everything, but everything is not Krishna. You know, I'm not going to put my iPhone on the altar and worship it. You know, or anything stupid like that. Or worship a dog. So. And this is where we accept that Krishna, the personality of Godhead, using his spiritual energy in a material way or a spiritual way, therefore everything is Krishna. But if we have no understanding of Krishna, the person, Bhagavan being everywhere, then it takes on its material aspect. And therefore, we accept everything as God is not correct. You know. You know, if we see Krishna as an ordinary human being and can't understand his all-pervasiveness, then you know, we're actually seeing things in a material way, and therefore, everything is not Krishna. We're just seeing the material energy. We're seeing material things. So, you know, it's quite a fine line, isn't it? It's a very interesting statement, Prabhupada, mate. How this can be sort of, you know, the same philosophy can be taken by the impersonalists or even by devotees, you know, in the wrong way, yeah?
It's like this topic of seeing Krishna everywhere.
Mm.
Like I've heard, like his microdev says, like we can try to understand Krishna's pastimes like Vrindavan or Ramayana or something. But if we can't see this is the first pastime, we have to understand that Krishna's created the whole world and we're in it.
Yes.
What are we doing here?
Yeah, that's right. It's the same point.
Happen,
yeah.
It's a super soul everywhere.
That's right. That's exactly
right.
Pastimes
coming all around us all the time.
Yeah.
We're in.
That's right.
Yeah.
It is Krishna, you know, that person, that cowherd boy, who is all pervasive and everything is his energy. We have to understand that first. Then you can sort of understand his pastimes. And, you know, if that is not there, then, you know, you know, we become subject to impersonalism or materialism, in our consciousness. So it's a very, you know, it's a very fine line. That, you know, so that acceptance of Krishna as Bhagavan is, you know, crucial, the crucial difference. And, you know, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's one purport there where each of the demons was killed. They each attain certain higher destinations. And, you know, in that purport, and Sanatana Goswami describes, is because, you know, for whichever little bit they had some appreciation of Krishna, the destination they achieved was higher. You know? So some wouldn't even accept him as God. And so they might merge into the Brahman. Some accepted him as God, but they were envious of him. So, you know, there's a higher destination. And then, so, that acceptance of Krishna, Bhagavan, as the personality of Godhead and everything is his energy is crucial to how we remain a materialist, an impersonalist, or a devotee, and a pure devotee. And, it's that concept that's crucial to how we see things and how we apply this statement, everything is one. So then, Prahlad describes, my dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, the entire cosmic creation is caused by you and the cosmic manifestation is an effect of your energy. Although the entire cosmos is but you alone, you keep yourself aloof from it. The conception of mine and yours is certainly a type of illusion, Maya, because everything is an emanation from you and is therefore non-different from you. Indeed, the cosmic manifestation is non-different from you and the annihilation is also caused by you. This relationship between your lordship and the cosmos is illustrated in the example of the seed and the tree, or the subtle cause and the gross manifestation. So, here, Srila Prabhupada explains this, that, quoting Bhagavad Gita 7:10, Bijam mam sarvabhutanam vidipata sanatanam, know that I am the original seed of all existences. So, the information we're getting is that there's only one God, that there is nothing else but him. Now, the Mayavadis, they explain it in this in their own way, but the Supreme Person of Godhead asserts the truth that he is everything and yet he is separate from everything. This is the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is called Achincha Bheda Bheda Tattva. Everything is one, the Supreme Lord, yet everything is separate from the Lord. That is the understanding of oneness and difference. And that's what Prabhupada meant when he says, everything is Krishna. Krishna is everything, but everything is not Krishna. That's, you know, what he's saying here. That because he actually remains separate from it. So here we see the table, manifestation of Krishna's energy, and yet he's separate from that in his complete absolute position. Prabhupada explains the example that Prahlad has given. It's easy to understand, he says. Everything exists in time, yet there are different phases of the time factor. Present, past and future. Present, past and future are one. Every day we can experience the time factor as morning, noon and evening, and although morning is different from the noon, which is different from the evening, all of them are taken together as one. Time. The time factor is the energy of the Supreme Person of Godhead, but the Lord is separate from the time factor. Everything is created, maintained, and annihilated by time, but the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, has no beginning and no end. He is Nitya Sasvata, eternal, permanent. Everything passes through time's phases of present, past and future, yet the Lord is always the same. Thus there is undoubtedly a difference between the Lord and the cosmic manifestation, but actually they are not different. Accepting them to be different is called avidya, ignorance. To think the time and the Lord is different, that's ignorance. And at the same time, we have to understand that there is a difference between the Lord and the cosmic manifestation. Because he doesn't experience the, time has this past, present and future, but you don't see that within the Lord. He always remains the same. The true oneness, however, is not equivalent to the conception of the Mayavadis. The true understanding is that the differences are manifested by the energy of the Supreme Person of Godhead. The seed is manifested as a tree which displays varieties in its trunk, branches, leaves, flowers and fruits. Right, so here the tree and everything being, compared to the energy of the Lord. So there's a whole varieties in the branch, the trunk, the leaves and everything like that. It's like the energy of the Lord. So many varieties are being manifest. But the seed is, those varieties are not manifest within the seed. So Krishna is compared to like the seed. And his energies are compared to the tree manifesting. So there's a difference between them. At the same time, we understand that the tree has come from the seed. Back to Vinod Thakur sings, "My dear Lord, your creation is full of varieties. The varieties are one and at the same time different." This is the philosophy of Chinchipeta Tattva. And of course, then Ishvara Paramah Krishna, Brahma Samhita, says a similar thing. That he's the supreme controller, he has an eternal, blissful spiritual body, he's the origin of all, he has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. Because the Lord is the supreme cause, everything is one with him. But when we consider variety, we find that one thing is different from another. We may conclude, therefore, that there is no difference between one thing and another, yet in varieties there are differences. In this regard, Madhvacharya gives the example concerning a tree and a tree in fire. Both trees are the same, but they look different because of the time factor. The time factor is under the control of the Supreme Lord, and therefore the Supreme Lord is different from time. An advanced devotee consequently does not distinguish between happiness and distress. And here's where Prabhupada, we got all this philosophy going round the head. What does that mean to me? that we don't distinguish between happiness and distress. And this is what Prahlad did. He just keeps seeing Krishna. When a devotee is in a condition of so-called distress, he considers it a gift or blessing from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When a devotee is always thus situated in Krishna consciousness, in any condition of life, he is described as Mukti Pade Sadaiva, a perfect candidate for returning home back to Godhead. That when a devotee is fully Krishna conscious, undisturbed by dualities, he is sure that he will return home back to Godhead just as one inherits his father's property. Now, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, it mentions how, you know, by studying the teachings of Krishna, So we're studying actually Krishna's qualities in one sense, you know, how he is always transcendental and he has multifarious energies, and those energies produce a lot of varieties, even the material varieties. So Krishna is one with that, even the material world. And yet he has no material qualities because he's separate from that. So, you know, we're discussing, you know, what is Krishna? Understanding the qualities of Krishna is completely transcendental. Prahlad is saying, you know, you can see Krishna everywhere in the material world. But don't take it that Krishna is material. He's completely transcendental. Understand that what is the quality of Krishna? He's completely transcendental. And yet we can see him everywhere, even in the material world. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, in this 14th chapter, text number 2, it describes that becoming fixed in this knowledge, the knowledge of, you know, basically the soul, the supreme soul, and the material body, and how, you know, that one can attain to the transcendental nature like my own. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution. Now, Srila Prabhupada describes in this purport that generally in the material world, whatever knowledge we get is contaminated by the three modes of material nature. Yet knowledge which is not contaminated by the three modes of nature is called transcendental knowledge. As soon as one is situated in that transcendental knowledge, he is on the same platform as the Supreme Person. So Krishna is saying, you know, by this transcendental knowledge we're getting, you can get the same quality as Krishna, transcendental quality. Prabhupada describes how spiritual quality means we have a spiritual form in the spiritual world, just like Krishna does. And he says, there are spiritual activities and the spiritual situation is called devotional life. That atmosphere is said to be uncontaminated and there one is equal in quality with the Supreme Lord. To obtain such knowledge, one must develop all the spiritual qualities. One who thus develops the spiritual qualities is not affected either by the creation or the destruction of the material world. So, Krishna is saying, if you get the transcendental knowledge, you'll get the same quality as me. And in the purport, Prabhupada puts it in another way, to obtain that knowledge, you actually must develop all the spiritual qualities. So if Krishna says, if you get this transcendental knowledge, you'll get the same quality as me. That means, how do we judge that someone has actually gained that transcendental knowledge? They're getting the spiritual qualities, isn't it? Okay. If someone actually has transcendental knowledge, if they're understanding what Prahlad Maharaj and what Krishna is saying, what's the proof? They're getting transcendental qualities, because Krishna says that's the result. If you understand it, then you must be getting, and if you're not getting the spiritual qualities, the understanding is not there. The understanding is not. So Krishna consciousness is synonymous with not just an intellectual, you know, juggling of, you know, philosophy and what have you, but is concomitant with the spiritual qualities we attain. The knowledge is helpful to developing those spiritual qualities. And here, it's just a further expansion of the same teaching in Bhagavad Gita, that we're trying to understand that, you know, here, the modes of material nature, Krishna says the same thing in this chapter. He starts off saying the total material substance called Brahman is the source of birth, and it is that Brahman that I impregnate, making possible the birth of all living beings. He's saying the same thing. And he says, in the purport, the Mahatattva is the total cause of the total cosmic manifestation, and that total substance of the material cause in which the three modes of nature, in which there are three modes of nature, is sometimes called Brahman. So it's a similar point, isn't it? You know, that basically when it comes back to it, the material energy is synonymous with Brahman, because the Lord has his Brahman energy and is resting on that Brahman. And because the Lord has impregnated us, means that we've come from his spiritual qualities. We're manifest not as a product of the material energy. We were already existing before the material creation, so we're spiritual. So it's confirming the same point. We have the same spiritual qualities as Krishna, but we're thinking, no, I'm a product of this material energy. No, you're not. I impregnated you into this material energy. You're existing with me. You're already existing with me, and then I put you into the material energy. But you were there before the material energy manifested. So it's the same teaching of the Gita. And by understanding the knowledge given in the Bhagavad Gita, we reflect, oh, I've got spiritual qualities. Krishna's got spiritual qualities. He's before the creation. This material energy is called Brahman. It's the energy of the Lord. And that's a very difficult statement to understand. But here Prahlad is explaining it. That... you know, everything is one with Krishna. Krishna is completely spiritual, and therefore, in the ultimate sense, the material energy is not different from Brahman. It is coming from that same source. It is Krishna's spiritual energy. But when Krishna uses his energy in such a way that we can't perceive that Krishna is present everywhere, it becomes material. Yeah.
Madhavacharya example, I couldn't really follow the tree and the tree
in
fire. What does it mean?
Well, a tree in fire, it exists, it's burning, it's gone. You know, there's a past, present, and future in one sense. So we can see the effect of time, you know. The tree is, you know, growing, it's there, it's created. And then, you know, is producing some fruits presently, and then fire comes and destroys it. So there's a past, present, and future. So what's the difference between, you know, just seeing a tree and, you know, and the tree on fire? Is that we see the tree, and then we see there's something else there. There's time. in its phases of past, present, future. So there's two things there. It gives us a picture of two things. And that that time is controlling that tree. It's controlled by the past, present, future. That time is the energy of the Lord. It's not different from Him. But we and because that time, everything is one with God. Everything is this, the absolute truth. Then time is the absolute truth. No, yes, it's His energy, but He's existing separately from that because the past, present, and future are not present within Him. So He's got to be different from time. Time has past, present, and future. He doesn't. So, they're different. And at the same time, everything is Him.
On that point about the devotee doesn't distinguish between happiness and distress. So it says that's an advanced devotee. So how do we move to that? That can be quite hard. So how do we do that when we're not so advanced? We see.
Yeah, well, Prabhupada says it's actually easy, didn't he? Where did he say that? He said it's easy, actually. He's talking about the example, of course, but... the example in this regard is very easy to understand. Everything exists in time, yet there are different phases of time factor. So, happiness and distress, basically, everything is Krishna. Our happiness and distress is Krishna. Time, that is Krishna. Past, present, future, that is Krishna. But at the same time, He exists separately. So in other words, just as we say that time is non-different from Krishna, it's His energy, it's coming from Him. It's, it's His energy, which He always has full control of. Therefore, it is one with Him. Like the sunshine is coming from the sun. It's one with the sun. But at the same time, He's separate from it. Similarly, the manifestations, the things like the changing, the varieties. We're talking about the energies of the Lord manifest in different varieties. Time manifests in past, present, and future. And the material energy generally manifests as happiness and distress. That's the varieties of the material energy. That's the main varieties is happiness and distress. Does happiness and distress exist in Krishna? No. He remains always blissful. Ishvaraha. Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. It's a personification of bliss. There's no distress in Krishna. So the material energy has varieties of happiness and distress. I think it also describes, when you describe the tree of material existence, that there are two different types of fruits or something on the tree, happiness and distress. So, it's the varieties of what you taste in this world. You taste happiness and distress. So that is not different from Krishna, because that energy, material energy, has expanded from Him, and at the same time, He is different from it because there is no happiness and distress in Him, in the same way the varieties of past, present, and future are not present in Him. So He's different from it. So therefore, how it affects us is that whatever happens to us, we should be seeing Krishna. Krishna has given me great opulence. Oh, now I can go out and enjoy. You know, or great opulence has come to me. A devotee thinks, oh, Krishna has sent that to facilitate my desire to serve him. But if great opulence comes to us and we forget Krishna, so I mentioned this, I'm a good example of not Krishna consciousness. When I first read the Gita, before I ever met a devotee, I understood that you're supposed to offer everything to Krishna. That understood. So at the time I was working as a landscape gardener. And, what you do is you get all the rubble and the stones and, the rubbish, and bits of broken glass that the neighbours are throwing. You rake it all out and you put it in a wheelbarrow and you sort of take it somewhere. You're supposed to throw it to the rubbish. The boss used to sometimes just get us to throw it over the neighbours and then they'd have to deal with it, you know. Anyway, as I was tipping this over in the neighbour's fence, I'm thinking, there you go, Krishna. I've got to offer everything to you. Here's a wheelbarrow full of rubbish. I never quite understood it. I thought, Krishna, he wants everything. I don't know, what are you going to do with that wheelbarrow full of rubbish? I certainly don't want it. I'm glad Krishna's taken it. It was only years later when I became a devotee that it dawned on me that whenever I used to pick up my paycheck, I forgot that it, I never ever thought, oh, here, Krishna, here's my paycheck. That was for me. Friday night. It's at the town, you see. So when you actually, Krishna conscious means that, Krishna's there in the paycheck. he's there and he's there when there's no paycheck, that's what we're supposed to come to. But usually if opulent, if something comes to us, we may forget Krishna. We forget what Prahlad's saying. Oh, opulence has come. So Prahlad's saying, well, that's Krishna, and Krishna's giving this, for some reason to facilitate, my service and my connection with him. Krishna's removed my opulence. Krishna's doing that to somehow help me to surrender to him, That is, that famous verse in the 10th canto. So it's a practical application of this philosophy, because when it all comes down to it, we're talking about how this material world is non-different from Krishna. So how does that affect us? That affects us in this way, that when happiness and distress come, if we can apply it then, we've understood. And when happiness and distress come and we forget that Krishna is at distress and Krishna is at happiness, then we really haven't developed the transcendental qualities which we need to prove that if we develop the transcendental qualities, I'm a spirit soul. This is all, this happiness and distress, relate to the senses of the body. They come and go like the seasons. They relate to the sense of the body. There's nothing you can do about that. But I'm a soul. They're not actually affecting me. And my duty is to serve Krishna and perform my duty for Krishna. So that's a practical application, Prabhupada brings it down.
And Prabhupada actually, given in the next sentence after the verse, when a devotee is in condition of so-called distress, he considers it
a gift
or
a blessing. Yeah. That's right. Not easy to do. That's where your Krishna consciousness is. That's where you really sort out the men from the mice. and this is the thing. It's very easy to prance around like an advanced devotee, but you can guarantee material energy Maya knows how to expose whether one is actually such an advanced devotee or not. And sometimes, there's a little distress and we immediately, take it that the way to resolve that distressful situation is to lash out, you know, with some offences to Vaishnavas or Vaishnavis. Oh, this will fix it. Now, of course, a person, you know, who's Krishna conscious, they would never even think of doing that. You know, that you know, my distress, I'm going to lash out at some Vaishnava or Vaishnavi. You know, someone who feels the presence of Krishna everywhere and understands the principle that Krishna is acting through, you know, how we deal nicely with the Vaishnavas, is never going to do that. But one who's forgotten Krishna, you know, may do things like that. So, you know, the things like that, you know, Vaishnava aparad or, is a symptom that, Vaishnava aparad, guru aparad, so many different offences or sinful activities, breaking the rules and regulations of devotional service, not following, you know, these are all symptoms how, you know, we're actually not perceiving the presence of Krishna. Someone from the opposite sex, you know, passes our gaze. And the material senses take it, or there's the objects of the senses, you know, for my happiness. Now, a devotee is looking and saying, you know, here's Krishna, there's the material energy. So expert Krishna makes the material energy that, you know, he can create this illusion that here is the cause of my death and I'm thinking that I will enjoy. You know, so he's seeing Krishna. And there is a bewildered spirit soul, completely bewildered, they are thinking they're so beautiful. Whatever. But one is seeing Krishna and his energy is acting. You know, here is the enchanting smile of Krishna. This supposed object of beauty, Krishna, that's the enchanting smile of Krishna, material energy. He's saying that my devotees will not be tricked, or will he? I don't. So, you know, it is this happiness and distress which really tests our Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada stating here the same thing which Krishna said to Arjuna at the very beginning. You know, he's quoting this verse from the Bhagavatam, but, you know, in the second chapter, he says to Arjuna, I think it's text 15, Yamhina Vyatante Te Purusham Purushasaba Samdukasukam Diram Somitabhayakabate. A best among men, Arjuna, a person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation. Exact same quote. And that means the one who is disturbed by happiness and distress is not eligible for liberation. So Krishna is giving the transcendental knowledge, and one who practices bhakti as the servant of the servant of the servant can realize that transcendental knowledge, and as they realize that transcendental knowledge, they develop the spiritual transcendental qualities of the soul, which is non different from Krishna. A person who practices bhakti not as a servant of the servant, you know, there's some advancement there, no doubt, but that potent secret of success whereby one feels, you know, can come to a very advanced stage of Krishna consciousness will not manifest. And the result is that that devotee's happiness and distress, which they're not able to tolerate, then instead of acting in a transcendental way with the Vaishnavas and with the personality of Godhead and with the holy name, that devotee will act according to what satisfies their happiness and distress. And then, so actually, you know, it's that ability to avoid Vaishnava aparad, nam aparad, seva aparad, that shows that the transcendental qualities are there, which means that one is not dealing according to how happiness and distress are affecting us, but one is dealing in relationship with how Krishna is pleased by my activities, that I'll not commit this Vaishnava parade, I'll not jump over my senior god brothers, I'll not try and step on the heads or exploit people for my own facility or prestige within the spiritual circles like that. So that happiness and distress, as Krishna says, in the same chapter, the Bhagavad Gita, the stumbling blocks in the path of is that the same chapter? Is that
yes?
But is it two? What verse is that?
Attraction and aversion.
One should not come under the.
One should not come under such attraction and aversion, which are stumbling blocks.
Do you know what? One should not come under the control of attachment and aversion because they're stumbling blocks in the path of self-realization. Attachment and aversion. But anyway, that's it there anyway. One should not come under the control of attachment and aversion because they're stumbling blocks in the path of self-realization. So it's the same thing mentioned. We come under the control of them. We're maintaining material qualities. We're not acting according to the transcendental knowledge. We're given transcendental knowledge, and then what we've got to do is apply it. If we have the transcendental knowledge and we don't apply it, means we're acting beneath. That's what's called, they have a saying, someone who acts beneath their level of knowledge. And Krishna says, even a man of discrimination, which means a person who has been given transcendental knowledge, even one of the senses that they contemplate upon, will drag away, their intelligence like that. So, it's
chapter 3,
yeah. Verse number?
34.
You just say the translation.
There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion because there are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization.
Yeah. So, here we've got the philosophy of Prahlad Maharaj, everything is one with Krishna. How to apply it? Has a devotee properly understood that? Yes, means that they are acting in a transcendental way according to the transcendental principles of bhakti in the relationship with other devotees. So, they've got the tolerance and humility and, respect, and the servant of the servant, not being the Prabhu, the master, like that. They've been given that transcendent. So the philosophy is there, and they're applying it. Krishna is everything. Happiness comes, distress comes. This is Krishna. How will I act? Not according to how I'm affected by the happiness and distress. But try and understand how Krishna is present there in this happiness and distress solely for the purpose of my advancement on the path of liberation. He's directly dealing with me. We said Prahlad here, and that was at the previous verse, in the purport, Prabhupada says to verse 30, therefore, the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in maintaining his devotees are transcendental, not material. Hiranyakashipu was thinking, there is no spiritual, personality of Godhead in one sense, You're looking at some material pillar, he's seeing, everything is material. And Prahlad's saying, yes, the Lord is everything in this material energy, and yet because he's separate from it, he's using this his energy to act in a spiritual way towards his devotees. That's the point. Now, when one can see that, one can execute, you know, there are six principles of devotional service. Accepting everything unfavorable for devotional service, not for what gives you happiness. Rejecting anything unfavorable, not because you're averse to it. You know, being confident in the Lord's protection. Why is that? He's not different from everything in this material world. Like that. It's just Krishna, you know, surrendering to the Lord. You know, so one feels so without understanding this philosophy, you can't actually manifest those you know, six principles of which are favorable to devotional service. They're not properly manifested without the application of this philosophy. If you don't have that faith, you know, you just see, you know, the same Krishna is everywhere. I just see a door and a, you know, some dust in the corner. And, you know, so many things. But it does come down to this practical application. Which is exactly what Prahlad did. Text 32. O my Lord, O Supreme Person of Godhead, after the annihilation, the creative energy is kept in you, who appear to sleep with half-closed eyes. Actually, however, you do not sleep like an ordinary human being, for you're always in a transcendental stage beyond the creation of the material world. And you always feel transcendental bliss. As Karana Daksha Vishnu, you thus remain in your transcendental status, not touching material objects. Although you appear to sleep, this sleep is distinct from sleeping in ignorance. So again, he's giving proof of what he's further said. The Lord is different from the material creation. Yes, he's in this huge form of Karana Daksha Vishnu, you know, that's there even before the material creation manifests. He appears to be sleeping, but he's always, you know, blissful, and he has nothing. He doesn't touch the material objects. So he appears to be sleeping like a human being. But because he's not even touching the material creation, then how can he be sleeping like a human being within material creation? How can someone who's not touching material creation be considered to be sleeping like a human being who's under material creation? He's not even in the material creation. He's you know, different. He's not even touching the material. So we can't say that his sleeping is part of the material creation. He's separate from it. So it's not tamaguna. Now here, Prahlad's taken us that the Lord is one with everything. Now he's given some form to that person, isn't he? You know, we're now getting everything is not different from the Lord who exists beyond mature creation. Now we're getting a picture, well, and he's got this form, you know, as Karana Daksha Vishnu, and he sleeps and lays down and what have you. So there are, you know, now we're getting a concept of, you know, he is performing some activities, but they're spiritual activities because he's not even touching material creation like that. So he's giving us a little further understanding of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And his, that he has form and activities, and they're all transcendental, not touch. This cosmic manifestation, material world, is also your body. This total lump of matter is agitated by your potent energy known as Kala Shakti, and thus the three modes of material nature are manifested. You awaken from the bed of Sesha, Ananta, and from your navel, a small transcendental seed is generated. It is from this seed that the lotus flower of the gigantic universe is manifested, exactly as a banyan tree grows from a small seed. So, the Lord glances at the material energy with his Kala Shakti, time factor, and the three modes of material nature become manifest. He appears within the universe on the bed of Sesha Ananta and as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, the gigantic universe is manifest, exactly as a banyan tree grows from a small seed. So the three forms of Vishnu, Karanadakshaya Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, who are the origin of creation and maintenance, are generally being described. Yeah, I'll call you back in a minute. Yeah, I'll call you back in a minute. So, thus, from this description, we the original cause of everything is Vishnu, and consequently, the cosmic manifestation is non different from Vishnu. Same thing confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. In this way, Krishna is ultimately the cause of all causes. The conclusion is that both the material world and the spiritual world are considered to be the body of the Supreme Lord. We can understand that the material body is caused by the spiritual body and is therefore an expansion of the spiritual body. Thus, when one takes up spiritual activities, one's entire material body is spiritualized. Similarly, in this material world, when the Krishna consciousness movement expands, the entire material world becomes spiritualized. As long as we do not realize this, we live in the material world, but when we are fully Krishna conscious, we live not in the material world, but in the spiritual world. So here, Krishna, you know, Prabhupada giving another understanding of how we practically apply this philosophy. So we're starting to see how everything is definitely non-different from the Lord and therefore ultimately, you know, spiritual, although it can act in a material way. And the material body literally, you know, is manifesting because there's a spiritual body there. Like, so there's a seed and then, you know, some variety comes from it. As Prabhupada says it here, that when one takes up spiritual activities, one's entire material body is spiritualized. And he's saying that this ISKCON, just like we have, is the presence of Krishna or the Supreme Soul engaging everyone in spiritual activities, and therefore, when the Krishna consciousness movement expands, the entire material world becomes spiritualized. As long as we do not realize this, we live in the material world. But when we are fully Krishna conscious, we live not in the material world, but in the spiritual world. So realization of ISKCON is another test of one's being able to see that Krishna is everything. So I guess the hard thing, you know, here is to say that we're looking for something spiritual. And someone says, yes, it's all around you. And you're thinking, oh, God, you know, so, you know, we're in the material world. You know, I'm looking for something spiritual. Yes, yes, it's all, you know, this is all spiritual. I mean, I don't think you know what, you know. So that's the hard thing. You know, they're thinking, no, you know, something beyond all this material stuff, you know, which is chaos and death and, you know, wars and hatred and violence and greed. You know, I'm looking for something spiritual. No, this. So it's very hard, isn't it? So, you know, Prahlad's proving the point. No, actually, because it's all come from, you know, the spiritual absolute truth, that energy is nothing but the spiritual energy from the absolute truth. But that spiritual energy can have a variety where it covers your spiritual consciousness, and then it appears material. So, you know, that's the hard thing. And for us, you know, it manifests, you know, for the average person who comes into contact with ISKCON, I think you say there's a spiritual movement. You know, it looks like any other, you know, movement in this world. And from what most people see in this world, the most materialistic movements are the religious movements. And sometimes they think the most demoniac, you know, are the religious movements. And we're trying to say, well, this is spiritual, you know. So for a lot of people, it's like, you know, really? You know, a lot of people, and sometimes even devotees who sometimes get spat out of this, gone, you know, unfortunately, go away, you know, thinking, you know, I didn't quite catch the spiritual nature of ISKCON, you know. So, you know, but that's actually the test, you know, is when we perceive that the material world, what to speak of the material world, ISKCON, which is actually engaging people in spiritual activities, it is spiritualizing, or it's removing the covering from what already is spiritual. You know, you can put it like that. You know, you put iron next to a magnet, there's no attraction. There's some rust. Polish up, then the attraction is there. So, you know, Krishna consciousness is there. The spirituality is there, but it's there's a covering, and the impurities are taken off like that. So that's how it applies to us, is actually, you know, having faith that, you know, so many good and bad things may appear to happen to a devotee in ISKCON, but a devotee only sees, but it's all Krishna. It's completely spiritual, and he is acting transcendentally. Now, that's an interesting concept. Be very careful with that one. That doesn't mean that, for instance, you know, say a devotee comes up, and, you know, you weren't looking, while you weren't looking, they steal your wallet and all your money and go and, you know, get themselves a new car or something. Oh, yeah, no, ISKCON's all spiritual. I was a devotee, knocked off my wallet, went spirit, part of ISKCON, it's all spiritual, it's all good. Go home to your wife. I'll give you spiritual, you're not, go and get that wallet. You're not coming back home, to, you know. So, you see, there can be misapplication. You know, that sometimes devotees can take this philosophy to justify their bad behaviour, or sort of, you know, I am, you know, you know, acting spiritually. I'm part of the spiritual movement. Whatever I do is spiritual. Whatever I do is spiritual. But whatever you do is nonsense, like that. So there's some real misapplications of this. How do we reconcile that? That everything is Krishna, it's all spiritual. And, you know, the clue here that Prabhupada is giving is that ISKCON spiritualizes everything. But those who don't take up the spiritualizing process remain material. Right? So, in other words, just to be officially in ISKCON and not taking up the spiritualization process means you can remain material in your consciousness and material in your activity. So we see the levels of spiritualization. So ISKCON is transcendental, full of so many devotees. It's all under the direct spiritual supervision of Krishna. He always does the right thing. That's one thing you can guarantee. Prabhupada, another. He always does the right thing. But not every devotee in ISKCON always does the right thing because they haven't been properly spiritualized. And therefore we can't just say, well, that's Krishna. No, that's their material contamination. But because this movement is under the control of Krishna, and we're trying to be sincere devotees, the servant of the servant, Krishna, who's completely spiritual, he will protect us. And therefore, we always remain under the spiritual energy, even when some devotees who have not been properly spiritualized are acting in a very materialistic way, in the name of spiritual life. But you can see the things, I won't bore you with the details. I have to give a few. One time, one devotee was we're in Perth. One devotee's he's peeling the potato. He's cutting the potatoes straight into the pot. You know, big pot we're cooking up for Sunday feast. He actually cut his finger, right? So the blood's going into the pot. He said, Prabhu, you're bleeding into the pot. He said, Prabhupada said, ISKCON is my blood. That's not what he meant. Your blood is. But, you know, there's some funny things happening, you know, when the philosophy is, you know. But actually the easy way to test whether someone has been spiritualized, what's the easy way? We've all been sitting here. What's the way that you test whether someone's been, had they been really strongly spiritualized from what we've discussed today?
How they face any difficulty?
How they act in happiness and distress?
They don't
deal in ISKCON according to their happiness and distress. They're dealing in ISKCON according to the principles of bhakti which Krishna likes. That's the difference. As soon as you see a devotee dealing with other devotees according to their happiness and distress and just pushing aside the etiquettes of the spiritual etiquettes of bhakti, you can understand that person is struggling. You know, the spiritualization process is, you know, something is there, but, you know, not very, you know. I mean, you know, your average devotee should be, you know, reasonably transcendental, actually. Your average devotee should really be beyond, you know, the happiness and distress. And that means they're able to follow the etiquettes. A devotee who can't follow the etiquettes, you know, although ISKCON is non-different from Krishna, we can't take it that each and every devotee is doing something fully spiritual. And we can tell who is not doing something fully spiritual because they're relating to us according to their happiness and distress, not according to the principle of the please Krishna and the Vaishnavas, especially the Vaishnavas. From that great lotus flower, Brahma was generated, but Brahma certainly could see nothing but the lotus. Therefore, thinking you to be outside, Lord Brahma dove into the water and attempted to find the source of the lotus for 100 years. Now, there's a footnote here. One day for the demigods equals 6 of our months. Do the maths. He could find no trace of you. However, for when a seed fructifies, the original seed cannot be seen. And so the development, Prabhupada says, of the cosmic manifestation is like the fructification of a seed. When cotton is transformed into thread, the cotton is no longer visible. And when the thread is woven into cloth, the thread is no longer visible. Similarly, it is perfectly correct that when the seed that had generated from the navel of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu became manifest as a cosmic creation, one could no longer understand where the cause of the cosmic manifestation is. Modern scientists have tried to explain the origin of creation by a chunk, but no one can explain how such a chunk might have burst. And of course, the scientists have a dilemma now, and that is because they see that the scientific evidence shows that there was a burst of energy before the burst of the chunk. Yeah, and that's what they're trying to... So therefore, they've now come up with a theory, going back to Carl Sagan, who suggested... Carl Sagan, who a lot of modern scientists... he was sort of modern, but just prior to them. He said if you take all the descriptions of cosmology in this world, the Vedic conception is the closest to... that actually fits all the knowledge that we have. And up until this point... They had this, you know, one universe type situation with many different galaxies and what have you. But now they say that there are multi-universes being like that, which is even more closer because the scientific evidence proves that there was a burst of energy before the burst of the chunk. And they're trying to, you know, so therefore they have to understand there are multi... these things happen again and again. So our universe like that. So... So Prabhupada's statement here is so... he's just right on the ball. No one can explain how such a chunk might have burst. That, so then, you know, if you explain that there, okay, there was a chunk that burst before that which burst our chunk, you know, what burst that one? You know, they just get tied up in knots. So the Vedic literature explains that the total material energy was agitated by the three modes of material nature because of the glance of the Supreme Lord. In other words, in terms of the chunk theory, the bursting of the chunk was caused by the Supreme Person of Godhead. Thus, one must accept the Supreme Cause, Lord Vishnu, as the cause of all causes. So Prahlad's pointing this out, that the personality of Godhead is the cause of all causes. But... trying to look, you know, well, show me that cause, show me that seed. That's, you know, not possible. Lord Brahma, who is celebrated as Atma Yoni, having been born without a mother, was struck with wonder. Thus he took shelter of the lotus flower, and when he had been purified after undergoing severe austerities for many hundreds of years, he could see that the cause of all causes, the person of Godhead, was spread throughout his own body and senses, just as aroma, although very subtle, is perceived in the earth. Now, the Mayavadis interpret this philosophy to mean, I am the Supreme Lord. Aham Brahmasmi. I am that spirit. So... the Supreme is the original seed of everything, thus extends everywhere, even throughout our bodies. Because our bodies are made of material energy, which is the Lord's separated energy. One should realise, since the Supreme Lord spreads throughout one's body, and since the individual soul is part of the Supreme Lord, everything is Brahman. Savam kalvidam Brahman. This realization was achieved by Lord Brahma after he was purified, and it is possible for everyone. When one is completely in knowledge of Aham Brahmasmi, he thinks, I am part of the Supreme Lord. My body is made of his material energy, and therefore I have no separate existence. Yet although the Supreme Lord is spread everywhere, he is different from me. Chinchabeda Beda Tattva. Now here's the example to try and understand that. The aroma within the earth. In the earth there are aromas and colours, but one cannot see them. Actually, so you look over a field, and you know, especially over summer, you look over that field, you go up to the western suburbs, you know, just before they put all the houses on top, and you just see, oh, you know, just brownie sort of that. You don't see colours and aromas. But they're there. But you can't see them. And then we find that when the flowers grow from the earth, they appear with different colours and aromas, which they have certainly gathered from the earth, although in the earth we cannot see them. So they are there, because otherwise, how, you know, if they're not there, then where are the flowers with the aromas and colours coming from?
From the plant itself.
What's that?
The plant itself.
And where's that coming from?
The plant's genes.
And where's that
the
coming
plant
from?
Is coming from the soil, but
aha.
The aroma, how can this I never understood actually. because it's according to the genes. The rose plant has a genes to give that particular color.
Yeah.
So even when they say in the creation, they say that actually aroma comes. I've never understood that properly. I just repeated like a parrot, but that point, because it is according to the different
where do the parrots come
genes,
from?
The genes of the plant that you're getting different colors. And
the
take an example of that, you from the clay you make different size of pots. But there, the clay is the same material.
Yeah,
so
the
but here the genes are in the seed. It's a seed which has the genes. So it's not an example like, that's what they give in Bhagavad Gita, that from clay you can make different size of pots. But it doesn't seem the same. As said, from the soil different plants are coming, it's giving different fruits and aromas. I didn't get the analogy.
Well, so with the seed draws from the earth.
The seed, sorry?
So in other words, if you put the seed on this desk, the colours and the aromas will not come. Because it cannot draw anything from the desk. But if you put it on the soil, it draws from the earth and grows. So it's drawing the colours and the aromas from the earth. But it can't draw it from here. They're not here.
It
can't draw it from the carpet.
It's drawing the minerals and water.
What's that?
It is drawing only the minerals and water, not the colours and the aromas. It is drawing the minerals.
Yeah.
And water.
From the earth.
From the soil, yeah.
That's what we're saying. It's drawing something from the earth.
Yeah, but it's not the aroma that it draws.
Yeah, from the...
How can it draw the aroma? It's not drawing the aroma. I can't understand that.
Well, if you put a seed on this desk, it will not...
I understand that, what you're saying.
But when you
but
put
I
it
see,
in the soil, it draws
from
that
soil.
And you end up with... So, obviously, it is drawing it, you know... You end up with colour, you end up with variety. If you put the seed on this desk, you won't end up with a variety. You have to put it on the soil. If you put it on stone...
If I only put rose, then I get the same aroma. I'm not going to get a mango aroma.
Yeah.
So I'm getting the same aroma if I put a field full of roses.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to get different aroma. Then according to that, if I put everywhere only... rose seeds, I should get different aromas because it's the aromas are different. But if I put roses, I get rose. If I put a lemon tree, I get that lemon tree smell. So it's depending on what seed I put. Only that is available.
Yeah. So you
how
know.
How can I say it's from the? I'm getting different aromas from the soil.
It is present in the soil. Mm. It's already present, but whichever comes in, it takes.
No, so for instance, if the soul, which is the seed of this material body, you know, comes into this body, we get this particular type of body or this particular type of species. You know, the earth is able to, you know, manifest... A multitude of different colours and aromas according to the seed you put there. But you have to put the seed there and it has to be the earth, it has to be connected with the earth. Same, the material energy can produce a multitude of material bodies, but it depends upon, you know, the soul that you place. You know, each soul has, particular desires and karma, and therefore, you know, one soul from the same material energy is producing... dogs, so you know, so many souls are producing just dogs from the same material energy, and so many, so it's actually a very good analogy because, and so many souls are producing just elephants, it's the same material energy. So the material energy is like the soil, you put one soul there and you get elephants, you put another soul there, you get ants, you know. So you put one seed there, you get roses, you put one seed there, it's the same, it actually fits the way the material creation is there, but you know. If the material energy wasn't there, would you get, you know, the material elements? No, you wouldn't. So, you know, the soul in the material world creates material bodies.
That,
the seed.
During in Bhagavatam, and earlier we read about, I think it's Prithu Maharaj, that he churned the earth, and because the earth said that the citizens are all starving.
Yeah.
And then he said, okay, you churn the earth and you take off everything from here.
Yeah.
From the earth, you're taking off everything.
Yeah.
That's where I said, okay, everything is in the earth.
Yeah.
Little bit, but still, when it comes to scientifically talking, I'm not able to correlate the two. There's some gap somewhere.
Well, if you put a seed on concrete, you're not going to get the colours and the aroma.
Because the seed can't grow there.
The seed can't grow means the seed must draw something, and it's not capable of drawing something from the concrete. There's no colour and aroma in the concrete, so it can't draw it. Yeah?
The same thing, this week, Brijendra Mustafa,
yeah.
We have heard that earth is one of Krishna's energies. Here Krishna explains that he has imbued the earth with a variety of fragrances. If you plant a rose seed which has no fragrance and water which has no fragrance, a fragrant rose will bud from the bush.
Mm.
Similarly, a jasmine seed or as a gardenia bulb will each yield blooms with unique and wonderful fragrance, which all are released from the earth.
Yes. Yeah.
Same as.
So the difference is here. The scientists are saying it's in the genes. But
yeah.
What we are saying is actually the seed actually has no smell.
But what we take from that, basically, is that basically if we look at the earth, we can't see the colour and we can't smell the aromas, right? But we think, oh, they're not there. Someone might think like that, or they're not in the earth. But we don't think like that, do we? We think they are there. So in the same way, we look at the material energy and the Lord is spread, dispersed throughout the material energy, but we think, no, he's not there. You know, I can't see it. So just because we can't see... So the example is, because we can't see the Lord spread throughout, or we can't see, you know, the colours and aromas spread throughout the earth, doesn't mean that they're not there, because, you know, basically there is a way of manifesting those. You know, you put the seed there, allow it to grow, and then those colours and aromas will come out of the earth. Oh, they were there, you know. I did it with concrete, it didn't work. You know, I put a seed, you know, here and there. None of it worked, but when I put it in the earth, you know, it come out. So it's drawing it from them. And I think he mentions by tapasya, he came to this realization, you know, that by tapasya, we able to, you know, perceive the presence. And that, what is that tapasya? Basically, not being subjected to attachment and aversion, happiness and distress, but acting on the platform of the soul, like that. That's called tapasya, like that. And by that process, we actually come to realize our own spiritual nature and even the Lord's spiritual nature. So let's leave it there, and we'll come back to this. So how many verses in this chapter? We got... we're almost there, aren't we, with this one? There's 55 verses. Yeah. So, and we're up to, lock this in, we're up to 36. Yeah. And bear this in mind, that we're seeing Prahlad Maharaj, that by the grace of being the servant of the servant of the servant, he... developed the Krishna consciousness, which he used in his practical life in the case with Hiranyakasipu, and he's teaching us how he saw the Lord even within the pillar, and not that just he saw it, but how everyone can see it. You know, how everyone can be Krishna conscious like Prahlad. What is that consciousness that he has? Everyone can, you know, see the presence of the Lord just like Prahlad. And of course, then, you know, we will apply that. Yes, I would love, you know, isn't that a wonderful thing, actually, that you, you know, you think that in this lifetime, I will actually be able to perceive the presence of the all, you know, mighty, powerful personality of Godhead within every single thing at all times and have this intimate friendship with him. Such a position of, you know, unlimited, glorious position to be in. You know, that's Krishna consciousness. And here we're seeing how it is possible that if you look at the philosophy, it's possible. You know, don't discount that what Prahlad is something material. It's actually possible. It makes sense. And two, how to attain that position through bhakti yoga, especially taking shelter of Vaishnavas rather than, you know, trying to serve the Lord directly with our own prowess, you know, in transcendental material quality. All right, let's leave it there. Hare Krishna. Jai. Jai, yeah. Nishinga Chattadasi tomorrow. Nice. So we will, and there's the Lord within stone just over there. There's Prahlad Nishinga Chattagram. When they have the little chakra on the right side, there's Prahlad. And when they have a little chakra on the left side, it's Lakshmi. Sometimes I have one that has both. Just give us a call about 7-ish, Newman. I'll just see how I'm sitting.
So, 7 o'clock, I should give you a call.
Hare Krishna. Yeah.